Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 25th day of April. In Chicago this week, corn and cattle posted outside of weeks. We'll try to find out what that means as we make our way through this edition. We'll talk with Bill Lapp. He's at Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dell Durkles from AgriVisor in Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He, of course, is in Atchison, Kansas. Well, let's begin with this discussion question, and we'll start with you, Ellen Dearden. When you took a look at the numbers from the Cattle on Feed report, which was due out at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon, did they surprise you at all, and what do they mean for trade on Sunday evening?
The cattle placements during the month of March at 95% of a year ago did surprise me. I thought we would be below a year ago. Last month we were above a year ago, but being down 5% did surprise me. I think it will be pretty darn friendly to the deferred months. We've been talking about shorter supplies. This just confirms that that's the case. And we've already got a rally underway and a good strong week.
Hey, Dale Durkles, have you folded this into the corn market and what you think it means there?
Oh, I don't know that, you know, it's really big to the corn market necessarily. You know, we do have a history, to a small degree anyway, of seeing sometimes some month-to-month volatility in these placement numbers. And so, you know, the last couple of months we were well above, and that's a little bit friendly, but I wouldn't say the break or the decline we had in the placement numbers is anything I'd say is overtly negative to corn right now.
And Mike Zuzolo, your version of that?
Well, I think the big thing, you know, to go along with Ellen is if we do see another bump up in the cattle here, Todd, I do think that it may be the time to go ahead and get some longer-term hedges in place. And I say that because the cold storage report at the beginning of this week said that the pork and poultry drawdown would at least suggest that we are getting good beef substitution occurring now. We're seeing that with the McDonald's and the Burger Kings out there. And the cattle on feed report kind of helps feed this mindset that, yes, supplies are going down, but you've also got an issue with the demand side starting to rear its head. And we talked on the closing market commentary about the wholesale to retail prices, wholesale giving way to retail, and that kind of hurts both ways. The packer doesn't want to pay as much to the producer on the wholesale side if it's losing the retail, and if the retail is going up, which mid-March retail beef prices hit an all-time new record of $2.44, if the retail is going up, that starts to curb demand. So when I put that in, and as you do use your term, to fold that into the mix, so to speak, with the hog-corn ratio and the feeder-corn ratio, which look like they may be topping as well, we may be on the cusp of getting some major highs in the livestock market in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, usually I wouldn't bring Bill Lapp or the guest in quite so early, but I think we ought to at this point because he kind of has his pulse on what's happening in the other part of the world, the end-user part, or the McDonald's and the Burger King and other places. And, Bill, I'm wondering what you thought of that cattle on feed figure as it came out.
Well, the thing that I guess, you know, following the flows like the other commentators were a little bit surprising, the depths of the declines. You know, just looking at the on-feed numbers, I think heifers might have been down 6%, and it keeps reflecting the earnest effort that's being undertaken to try and expand the herd to retain some heifers for breeding and get us, and cow slaughters down as well. You know, it's a treacherous path here in the beef market for where we go now. Markets peaked out, you know, a couple weeks ago, but there's nothing that says, particularly on the cattle side, that we can't look back and try and, get back to those highs, at least for short term.
And one more quick question for you, and then we'll move on again. How have you handled your customer base, the end users, as this price of both beef cattle and hogs have moved so sharply higher?
Poorly.
How do you wish you had handled it?
Yeah, it's been a real challenge, and you know, it's a little bit, there's a difference. On the hog side, you can get some correlation with the cuts, and you can do some hedging, and but on the beef side, there's really not very many good tools, so they have to, in most cases, set up the contract where they're on a rolling average, moving average, or 90-day deferred pricing based on what happened 90 days ago. But for the most part, in the food service side, you're almost forced to absorb almost all of the blow that the beef market gives you. And, you know, we're cycling down, and we might not see increases on a year-over-year basis in beef production until 16, at least 2016. So the fund will not, the beatings will continue until behavior improves, I guess.
And we'll come back to you in just a bit. Thanks, Bill. I know you're there at Midway Airport. We'll come right back to you. Let's continue on. I'd like to get an idea where each of you at this point think corn planting across the Midwest might be. When we talked with Ben Pruce on Friday afternoon, he's in the northwestern part of Iowa, he was of the opinion that at least in their immediate area, they didn't get a lot of rain. Farmers would be back in the field today, or were, and they'd have 35 to 40% of their corn crop in the ground by the time we got, pretty shortly here. So, Dale Durkles, what do you think?
You know, I've taken a look at, you know, the weather we've had across the heart of the Corn Belt, and kind of come to grips with the idea that we're going to be somewhere close to 20%. Going above it, I think, is really hard at this juncture, because when you get into some of the more northern areas, even northern Illinois, it's been too wet to do so much planting. There's been some spots in southern Illinois, and we've gotten bogged down in some other places. So I've generally targeted a 20% last year, I think it was. We were at 6.
Ellen Dearden?
I'm a little higher than Dale is. I think we'll come in somewhere close to where we were a year ago, and probably up around 25%. Parenthetically, our neighborhood has gotten a start, but nobody's too frantic.
And out in Kansas.
Well, Todd, I'm going to be the Goldilocks kind of guy. I want to be right in the middle between between Dale and Ellen. But I think the big thing that I would say that the trade was looking at going into Friday's close was the bigger it is, the more important it is, because it takes away the chances of having a late planting scare. And the buzz I felt like this week was the bigger the planting progress is here at the end of April, the bigger the corn acres are going to be, the bigger the national corn yield's going to be, and the bean acres are at their top end as of USDA's last report. So that's kind of what I'm taking away from it. Above 25, I think, would be bearish. Below 20, I think, would be bullish.
In general, are any of the three of you friendly or bullish the corn market?
Well, I'm not bullish like Zwicker was yesterday in his discussion with you.
Yeah,
but I do think that we could see a pop in this corn market. If we come in with a low number on Monday, we could see a pop in December corn up in the 5.25 area. That gets some people pretty excited. But to get there, I have to have real solid action above 508.5, and we went above there today, but we just couldn't get the job done and close up there.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Dale?
Purely from a technical perspective, I can see one more quick run to a new high. It doesn't have to occur, but if it does occur, I think we've got a top coming new. The thing that I still see as important as I look towards the end of May and on into June, I've got another important cycle, short-term cycle low coming up. So I think we're on the cusp of really putting in a short-term peak.
And then, Michael, and if you could transition into the 16-cent drop in May soybeans this week, that would be nice.
Yeah, I think the wheat market is still the leader here in terms of the corn, especially now that the corn bowl has been fed and the USDA has recognized it in the exports. And you know, I say that from a standpoint that the wheat-corn spread right now is right around $1.93, Todd. The high close last year on a weekly basis was around $2.64. So wheat has plenty of room, and I think the geopolitical situation and the hard red wheat conditions have fundamental space to allow the wheat to keep pulling corn up. But corn by itself, it gets harder and harder without these planting delays becoming reality. As far as the May beans dropping, I really feel like that the technicals, as we walked away on Good Friday, looked pretty negative. The spread was giving, the bull spread, that is, the July Nov and the May Nov spreads, was giving a sell signal technically, and kind of what Dale was talking about on the corn side, just from a pure technical standpoint, and talk of cancellations on the fundamental side, I think the trade felt like they could easily sell it at the beginning of this week and then reevaluate it after we got the weekly export inspection.
Hey, Dale, we're still at the point where we have to have cancellations in order to actually meet what USDA's estimates are by the end of the year.
Or we need imports. Take your pick. You know, it's one or the other, and I think, you know, it's the second side of the equation that really is the difficult scenario for people to get their arms around at this point. One thing floated to me in terms of cancellations this week I hadn't thought about. Mexico's soybean imports have been lagging expectations this year, and are we going to see some cancellations coming from there for whatever reason? I haven't looked particularly close at it. But on the import side of the mix, you know, as well as you can count, we know we've got four boats of South American beans coming from the U.S., one of which has already landed here about 2 weeks ago now. And we've got two cargoes of Argentine meal coming into the southeastern U.S. Here today, it's still talk that, you know, they're trying to, you know, they've resold another six cargoes, China has, of South American beans to someone. And they're still trying to resell maybe as many as another 10 to 12. But, you know, until those boats actually land or they're shipped from someplace and you can track their actual potential destination, you know, we're all going to just kind of feed our way through this environment for a while here.
Ellen, while we had that 16-cent drop in the nearby May, the Novembers held steady. They were up a half a cent on the week. Did that surprise you at all?
Oh, it kind of did. We still need bean acres. You know, we keep talking about we're going to have an ample bean crop in the world, but beans seem to be out of position for end users, and that seems really kind of been the story over the last several months. I want to throw out the idea that we're talking about bean imports, and Wilmington, North Carolina can certainly handle bean imports pretty easily, getting those to processors or pulling in the meal itself. But how about the Gulf? I mean, we're looking at Midwest processors generally off the river system. So how's that going to work? If we're talking about six more cargoes or 10 more cargoes or whatever the number is.
Well, isn't that where the ship landed a couple of weeks ago, Dale, right?
It did. It came in. I think it probably went to Destrehan. Bunge has a crush plant in Destrehan. It's been there for a long time. You know, it is a bit of a difficult thing to unload boats in the U.S. because mostly at our ports we aren't structured and set up to unload boats, but if they found the ability to do it there, to do it one time, it's easy to unload a boat and also easy to transload another barge and send it upriver. And we've got to remember there's a plant at Quincy, Illinois on the river, there's a plant at Carroll, Illinois on the river, and then there's another one at Owensboro, Kentucky. So we do have some possibility. It's not easy. It's a little more costly. But as recent as early this week, FOB prices down in Paranagua, Brazil, that's loaded on ship. We're 72 under the May and down there. So, you know, there's a huge disparity between cash prices in South America and the U.S. at this point, and you can't ignore that at this juncture. But it's still somewhat costly to bring them in the U.S. Ellen's right about that.
Well, speaking of Ellen, if you are prepared, Ellen, I'd like a question from you for Bill Lapp. Of course, he is with Advanced Economic Solutions in Omaha, Nebraska, in Midway. Where are you flying out to today, by the way? Are you going back home?
I drove across Indiana today, and now I'm going to head back, fly back to Omaha tonight, back home.
Well, have a safe trip. Ellen, you have a question for Bill?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about everybody thinks that we're going to run out of corn at some point in time this summer, run out of bushels, and I'm just wondering about your opinion there.
Well, I guess I'd be a little bit surprised, but, you know, the oat market took me by surprise when we couldn't move them from point A to point B. You know, this summer to run out, I don't think we'll be anywhere close to the stocks level we had last year, either on June 1 or September 1. So, you know, there may be dislocations primarily due to freight and rail inability to move the grain. But, geez, I'll have to do some more research on that to see if that's a possibility. I don't see it just standing here now.
Dale Dirkles?
You know, I want to shift gears a little bit and go back to the meat sector because of Bill's history and places he's been and the clientele he has. Are you picking up and hearing about any adjustments at the retail and even the institutional level about the quantity of meat being used? In other words, reducing package size of meat in the retail grocery counter or in terms of frozen entrees per se, reducing the amount of meat going into some of those by some small incremental amount to adjust for this higher wholesale price that they have, and trying to keep that retail price to the consumer somewhat the same?
There's at the retail level, at the retail meat counter, you know, there's been some reports of selling pieces instead of per pound, which is the traditional metric and how it reads to the consumer. And, you know, that's kind of short-term chicanery that they can do. Like a pot pie or a frozen dinner, it's pretty dangerous to start cutting back the size of those because you'll lose those consumers pretty quickly. They will notice that. But I will say that everybody's scrambling to find a better way to utilize more value meat cuts, especially like a chuck and a round, to bring those in. If it takes more time, maybe a restaurant will slow cook a roast and feature that. There's a few places you see it where there's turkey burgers popping up, and then you see, I think Burger King came out this week with chicken sandwich. So there's efforts being made to get around what looks like it's going to be a multi-year problem in beef. The pork, you know, you just kind of hold your breath and take your lumps and assume that it's going to be a shorter-term phenomenon, that we're going to have the extremely high prices we are right now.
And from you, Mike Zuzulo.
Bill, going back to what you talked about earlier, the end users you felt like weren't really able to or not covering their hedge on the short side with their meat, are they interested in covering their long grain hedges and getting their long grain hedges in place? And some of the contacts in Chicago I speak with who have bigger livestock clients than me have said they're only doing basis-only contracts, or they're scared to do it because of PED virus and not knowing exactly what their grain needs are going to be because that virus is still not under control. Can you hit any of those points?
We'll let Bill take that up when we come back here. We're wrapping up the first part of Commodity Week. Our panelists include the man you just heard, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Dale Dirkles is with AgriVisor out of Normal, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois. And our guest, of course, is Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions. He's out of Omaha, Nebraska. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 25th day of April when we last talked with Bill Lapp. We were trying to consider just exactly how folks were dealing with the marketplace. Bill, why don't you recap that question and give us your answer, please?
Yes, I think the question was, is there a way to use the corn futures and or perhaps cattle futures to engage in a hedging program that will protect yourself? And, you know, for beef, it's very difficult because there's so many different cuts and none of them represent a large share. And the correlations, between even trimmings and cattle futures, let alone trimmings and corn,
are limited. So you end up too easily with a Texas hedge if you try something like that. So most guys are pretty reluctant to do something like that. They know that there's a risk that they could lose on the hedge and pay more for their meat as well. So that hasn't been a common practice. A more common practice has been on the chicken side to use corn and meal futures to hedge your cost of chicken breast or whole bird or whatever you're buying on the chicken side.
Hey, Bill, because of your look into the food service side of the industry, do you see any broad trends that are forming that we might see as consumers in the next couple of years?
Well, you know, convenience still is obviously paramount for people. And, you know, time is time, saving time. And all that done with food safety in mind is going to be continue. You know, there's some people talk about not going back to the levels of beef consumption we had. We're down almost 20% in 7 years. And it'll take time, and we may not get back to those levels because once you do that, chicken can step in and fill the gap, if there is a gap, from beef. And, you know, if I said, well, 5 years from now, what's going to be the change in the pattern, I would say we'll probably have an overall increase in meat consumption. And I think primarily most of the growth will come on the chicken side.
Have you considered what the purchase of Smithfield Foods means on the global front?
Well, you know, I hear different things about how closely tied they are to their sponsors, their financial sponsors, and whether that means anything. I think we're already seeing such a big increase in exports of meat, and the number one protein consumed globally is pork. That I guess I would be of the opinion that puts them in a good place to take advantage of growth in pork consumption globally and maybe find some common practices to be used outside the U.S. that are, or best practices used outside the U.S. that are currently being used by U.S. farmers.
Bill, thanks so much for taking the time with us. We do appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bill Lapp, of course, is with Advanced Economic Solutions in Omaha, Nebraska. Now time for a final word from our panelist. We'll start with Dale Durkles. He's at AgriVisor in Normal, Illinois. Dale?
Well, one thing I'm starting to notice, which is kind of important, when you look at the broad commodity indices, I'm seeing the market getting positioned to put in at least some kind of a near-term peak, and they do have a cyclic parameter of having a bottom about middle of the calendar year, around July 1.
Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois.
I think it was a big deal this week when China bought Milo from the U.S., and if you look at where they were in the last month's time, they've bought a substantial amount. Milo does not have an import quota, neither does it have the GMO issue that corn does.
And Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
I think when you see the combination of strong corn demand still, a sloppy basis, corn volatility on planting, and then the wheat volatility due to geopolitics, I think this is a really good time to explore the corn put side of the equation for getting some downside locked in.
Well, our thanks to our guest and panelist here on Commodity Week. Remember, you can always find us at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to agricultural programming from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Find us online at willag.org. Now here's climatologist Jim Angel.
So far, April has been on the cool side with temperatures about 1 degree below average. In general, the northern half of the state has seen below average precipitation with amounts of around 2 inches, while the southern half of the state has been above average with amounts of 3 to 6 inches. Soil temperatures at the 4-inch level continue to warm into the upper 50s and low 60s during the day, but cool off into the upper 40s and low 50s at night. Soil moisture is starting to look a little dry in the top 4 inches, and stream flows across central Illinois are low for this time of year. Some upcoming chances of rain may help with this situation. The National Weather Service forecasts indicate that highs on Saturday across Illinois will range from the low 60s in the north to the low 80s in the south. On Sunday, the highs will range from the upper 50s in the north into the low 80s in the south. On Monday through Wednesday, the highs will be in the 50s in northern Illinois and in the 70s in southern Illinois. Overnight lows during this time should be in the 40s and 50s with little chance of frost. A very strong low-pressure system will move through western Illinois late on Sunday and bring rainfall for the next 2 to 3 days across the state. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Here the way the numbers finished up on the week. For the weekly trade, this is the high and low from Friday to Friday. A high this week for the corn in the May contract at $5.10¾, the low at $4.85½. The Friday to Friday change, posting an outside up week, 12¼ cents higher at $5.07 in the May. December also posted an outside up week at $5.06¼, 9½ cents higher. May soybeans in the nearby at $15.25 for the high, the low on the week at $14.64 for the range. Settlement price at $14.98, down 16 cents. November futures up a half in the new crop at $12.39¾ for the soybeans. The products, meal at $4.96 in the May, up $2.30, and the oil at $42.92, down 49. Soft red winter wheat at $7.03¾ for its high, low at $6.62½. Settlement price up 9 cents at $7.25, and that's a quarter cent. And July futures in the wheat at $7.08¼, up 9¼. June live cattle futures from the CME Group in Chicago on the week settled at $136.77½ per 100 pounds, up $2.40, posting an outside up week. The August feeder cattle also posted an outside up week at $184.62½, finished $3.22½ higher. And the June futures in the lean hogs, $124.52½, finished down 30 cents for the week. You can always find out more on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming.